You are listening to Bitcoin, Blockchain, and the Technologies of Our Future with Naomi Brockwell.
Financial privacy has practically vanished over the last 50 years. These days, we verify ourselves at every financial turn and have to defend each financial action to prove we're not doing anything wrong. It's something that we're all kind of used to and take for granted about the financial world. But we've forgotten that just a few decades ago, taking out money from our own accounts was our right. No 20 questions about what we're going to use this money for and what we do for a living. And our daily transactions, well, they weren't handed over in bulk to countless third parties. How strange that we've just accepted the current state of financial surveillance as the norm, given how starkly different it is from just a few short decades ago. But there's an even weirder phenomenon taking place. Most people continue to believe in a version of financial privacy that no longer exists.
The vast majority of people believe that their financial activity is confidential, that it's protected with their bank or their credit union, and the reality couldn't be further from that.
Nicholas Anthony is a policy analyst at the Cato Center for Monetary and Financial Alternatives, and he says that people think they have way more financial privacy than they actually do.
Americans do not have financial privacy really at all. We have this illusion of financial privacy.
Why is this? Well, first, the systematic dismantling of our financial privacy happened gradually over time without people really paying attention. And second, the bulk of this increased surveillance has actually been intentionally hidden from the public. In this video, we're going to walk you through the history of how financial privacy slowly disappeared and how we built a gargantuan financial surveillance system that no one really understands the extent of. While we're mainly focused on specific changes in the USA, the impact of these shifts have been global.
The US started to kind of export this legislative framework and this regulatory framework to other countries.
It's pretty much ubiquitous across the world that if you want to touch payment rails, your activities are going to be spied on. So let's understand how we got here by first taking a trip to the financial world as it was before 1970. We'll explain in a moment why 1970 was instrumental in shifting privacy norms.
Many things have changed since 1970. You did have freedom. You could go up to a bank and choose whether or not to transact with them based on just the cash in your pocket. That was about it.
Did anybody ever question why you were depositing or taking out money?
No. They just gave it to you.
I don't remember being scrutinized. They didn't do background checks in those days. It was just the money's there, the money's good.
Was there anything else that you needed to open a bank account back then?
I didn't have anything. I just had my father's word, actually. Essentially, it was just my dad saying she's good for the money.
Banks used to decide for themselves what information they needed in order to set up an account for you. And the information you gave them usually stayed between you and your bank.
That seems like such a long forgotten land. It almost feels like it's a fantasy at this point.
So what happened in 1970 to start to change all this? A pivotal piece of legislation was passed called the Bank Secrecy Act.
It's this huge landmark in the history of financial privacy, as far as the United States is concerned, and even the broader world.
The Bank Secrecy Act was a response to concerns over the use of secret foreign bank accounts.
Certain members of Congress were concerned that Americans were hiding their wealth in accounts overseas.
So the idea was to start collecting more information about people's finances to catch this. But there's a problem. Technically, the government isn't allowed to just dragnet capture everyone's personal information in the hopes of catching someone in a lie about their money. The Fourth Amendment was put in place to protect people's privacy, saying that the government needs a warrant and probable cause if it wants your information. So what did the government do instead? They required financial institutions to start keeping records of customers' transactions and personal information, and required them to report transactions over $10,000, including deposits, withdrawals, and other financial activities to the Treasury Department.
This was a real fundamental shift where all of a sudden we're forcing people working in the financial industry to report other Americans to the government for really nothing more than using their own money.
There was big pushback at the time about this being unconstitutional.
There were people raising concerns from Congress, from the banking industry, and even the ACLU.
They got a temporary restraining order to stop the Bank Secrecy Act, arguing that it violated the First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendments. The Fourth Amendment was the biggest focus of the case, which includes the right to be protected from unreasonable searches. The government being able to demand information about people's personal finances without a warrant was seen as a violation of this protection. But the Supreme Court ultimately ruled that the Bank Secrecy Act didn't violate any of these amendments. They said that if you hand over your information to a bank, it's no longer private information. It's part of the bank's business records. This completely undermined the expectation of privacy that people had always had with their banks.
This was a very fundamental change with the Bank Secrecy Act and the regime it ushered forward. It said that we want to have effectively a government agent in the room at all times.
The Supreme Court also said that the reporting requirements for the banks were not an undue burden because it applied only to abnormally large transactions. Abnormally large, meaning those of $10,000 or more. Let's put this into context.
In 1970, if you took $10,000 and transferred it to today's purchasing power, you could buy two brand new Corvettes. And you could have some money left over to cover taxes and probably even upgrades.
I mean, goodness, in 1970, $10,000 could buy you a new house in some areas. So yeah, if you were paying all cash for an entirely brand new house, it might be suspicious enough and a rare enough occurrence that it's not seen as a burden on financial institutions to report this, nor an unreasonable intrusion into people's daily lives. But the thing is,
there was no check on the amount that was set. Nowhere does it say adjust for inflation every year or every 2 years.
Year after year, the purchasing power of the US dollar disappears. As it does so, this financial surveillance silently and insidiously creeps further and further into people's lives.
For 50 years, it's been increasing and increasing and increasing.
The Supreme Court did recognize at the time how sensitive financial data is, that it touches upon intimate areas of an individual's personal affairs and can reveal much about their activities, associations, and beliefs. They agreed that at some point, governmental intrusion upon these areas would infringe upon rightful privacy expectations, basically concluding,
if this gets much bigger, we have something to be concerned about. Yet, right now, we'll give it a pass. And we're now in a place where it got a lot bigger, and we have a problem on our hands.
Since 1970, the Bank Secrecy Act's powers have not only expanded silently through inflation, but explicitly through all kinds of amendments that increase its scope.
1992, the Annunzio-Wiley Anti-Money Laundering Act. This was the first major expansion of the Bank Secrecy Act. What did this entail?
It's giving the Secretary of the Treasury the authority to require financial institutions to report suspicious transactions.
It introduced the concept of SARs, or suspicious activity reports. So instead of just reporting anything over $10,000, now banks had to report any suspicious transaction relevant to a possible violation of law or regulation, regardless of the amount. It opened the floodgates to a fire hose of financial reporting.
Each year, the financial services industry in the United States files about 26 million reports under the Bank Secrecy Act on Americans.
Banks now overreport information just in case, because otherwise they could face fines and even sanctions.
No one wants to be caught saying, I missed the one report, the one needle that was in the haystack. So instead, take the whole haystack, send it to the government.
That's a haystack of bulk data collected without a warrant.
Countless Americans are reported to the government for nothing more than using their own money. And it costs the financial services industry about $46 billion a year. These are costs that we're all paying. These are getting passed on to us. They're not being compensated for this service. This is something that the government is forcing them to do that really violates the privacy of all Americans and makes financial services more costly.
Now, originally, after the Bank Secrecy Act was first introduced, it was countered with something called the Right to Financial Privacy Act that said that if people's finances are being looked into, they at least need to be told about it. But in 1992, the government decided that they didn't want anyone to know, and the Annuzio Wiley Anti-Money Laundering Act made it so that
it's now confidential that these reports are even filed. You can't be told that your bank filed a report to the government for you using your own money.
This really ushered in a new era of mass surveillance of the financial activity of innocent Americans.
People still don't really realize what's been happening. And that's partly by design, by having it a confidential process, because then they don't have to worry about people being upset about it.
Banks went from protecting the privacy of their depositors to being forced to protect the secrecy of government surveillance programs.
It's kind of the epitome of privacy for me, but not for thee.
But things got even worse with financial surveillance in 2001, when the Patriot Act was passed.
Patriot Act closed dangerous gaps in America's law enforcement and intelligence capabilities.
This is right in the wake of the September 11th attacks. So people were scrambling to figure out not only what happened, but how can we stop the next one? And one of the tools that they identified for trying to stop terrorism was the financial system.
The Patriot Act has since become infamous for the ways that it expanded surveillance powers in general, giving easier access to communication records and sparking a wave of debates about oversight and the balance between national security and individual rights. But it's less common to hear people push back about how the Patriot Act took the financial surveillance system to a whole new extreme.
All of a sudden you had birthed out of this, the KYC regulations that require banks to not only know who you are, but to really know who you are.
KYC, which stands for Know Your Customer, was formalized and significantly expanded under the Patriot Act and is a core component of pervasive financial surveillance today. The Patriot Act included all kinds of surveillance expansion, largely written well before September 11, but it was the sense of urgency that 9/11 created that finally allowed these extensive legal changes to be pushed through. They were hidden amongst thousands of pages of a scrolling omnibus bill that no one even had a chance to read before it was passed.
No one could read that. No one did read that. Yep. And yet that became law.
We have this trend now of omnibus bills that are put forward as urgent and must pass, but are so massive that most of the time the people voting on these things don't even know what they're passing. And the result is that all kinds of surveillance expansions can creep in.
The rise of the omnibus bills is really scary. Politicians have recognized that that is a successful process to do what they want to do.
Another giant omnibus bill that snuck in more financial surveillance was the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, which introduced a rule intended to surveil all bank accounts with at least $600 of activity. Luckily, this was noticed and there was immediate pushback. The Treasury responded to the pushback, basically saying that they already have access to all your information.
This was kind of them saying the quiet part out loud. They kind of broke the veil and said, you know that privacy you think you have? You don't have it. And in fact, it's been so long since you've had it that you actually shouldn't be upset about this. You shouldn't have a problem with us surveilling you because we already surveil you.
But people weren't buying it. It's like a light suddenly went on for them with all this financial surveillance and they started to push back. And so the Treasury had to walk back their demands.
The bad news is it was only shut down partially.
Instead of applying to all bank accounts, they said that this reporting requirement would just apply to anything including a payment transmitter.
So something like PayPal or Venmo or Cash App.
So anytime you move $600 worth of transactions through any of these platforms, it is automatically reported to the IRS. Hardly a walk back at all.
When you have something as blatantly offensive to the rights of everyone that lives in this country as a proposal to surveil everyone's bank account, there shouldn't be a compromise. It should be a hard no. This is just another instance of our privacy disappearing.
The final piece of legislation that I want to mention is the Special Measures to Fight Modern Threats Act, introduced in 2022, which aimed to eliminate some of the checks and balances placed on the Treasury. Basically, the Treasury Secretary has this special ability to sanction transactions.
They can stop transactions, they can halt somebody's financial activity across borders.
And because this is such a powerful tool, there's always been a check on this power. They have to report every time they do this on the Federal Register, which is essentially a daily publication that records the activities and decisions of the government's executive branch. But the Fight Modern Threats Act tried to remove this pesky balance of power by essentially saying, we don't want to do that.
We don't want to tell the public what we're doing. We want to keep this hidden, much like past financial surveillance efforts. And so we're going to remove the check on this power so that we can start using it more.
This bill hasn't been passed, but it hasn't gone away either. And this same language to eliminate public oversight and expand Treasury powers keeps popping up in bill after bill. It was introduced as an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act, which failed, an amendment to the America Competes Act, which failed, and then as a standalone bill. Bills that try to expand financial surveillance in all kinds of ways just keep coming, and it's difficult to hold them back. Each time another one slips by, financial privacy in our lives is chiseled further and further away.
We're constantly seeing this growing expansion of surveillance, and it seems like we're really not able to turn the tide, because no one really knows that that's what's happening.
We've gotten to a bad place, but at every step along the way, it's been sold to Congress as a way to catch the most heinous crimes.
Terrorism, human trafficking.
But overwhelmingly, this isn't how these surveillance tools are actually being applied.
The top two reasons for filing a suspicious activity report: the bank isn't sure where you got that money, and you had a transaction that was below the threshold for a currency transaction report. So it was suspicious that you got near the threshold and nothing else.
But if these reports are even catching just a couple of bad guys, aren't they all worth it? Well, that's a question that we have to ask as a society. To what extent are we okay with pervasive surveillance if it stops bad people doing bad things? To answer this question, Nick says that we should first recognize that
the optimal crime rate is not zero.
Wait, what? Wouldn't a world with zero crime be better than a world with some crime? Not necessarily, because it depends on the costs of getting to that zero crime world.
We can't burn down the entire world just to stop somebody from stealing a pack of gum. The cost is too high. There is a percentage of crime that is going to exist. It's not ideal, but it is optimal.
Maintaining a balance of power by protecting people's privacy is essential for a free society.
It is through surveillance that our freedoms are limited. We need to have financial privacy. We have too many examples where surveillance has gone wrong.
So we have to be careful about creeping surveillance that tilts the balance of power too far away from the individual.
Removing this huge financial surveillance system does not mean ending the fight on terror or the fight on crime.
It just means that we need to make sure that Fourth Amendment protections are still present in the modern digital era.
It's not supposed to be absurdly easy to get this magic permission slip that lets you into everyone's homes. That is not the country we should want to live in.
Over the past few decades, we have slowly built a system of unchecked financial surveillance, and it's time to question whether this is the world that we want to live in.
Instead of having a regime that generates 26 million reports on Americans in a given year, have something that actually respects their rights and only goes after criminals. Financial privacy is just chipped away and eroded over time. But the worst part is nobody really recognizes that that is what's happening.
It's an uphill battle, but it's one that's worth fighting. And the first step is just making people aware of how far financial surveillance norms have shifted in just a few decades.
More people are aware of the importance of privacy. But until people start to recognize everything that's been going on and how much their rights have effectively been violated, I don't think we're going to see a major change in this momentum.
NBC TV is funded by community donations. If you'd like to support our free educational content that teaches people about the importance of privacy and how we can reclaim it in our lives, visit nbtv.media/support. And if you're just starting out, take a look at our book, Beginner's Introduction to Privacy, which also supports our channel. Thank you so much for liking, sharing, and subscribing to our content. We really appreciate you caring about this message. By the way, this video just looks at the government side of financial data collection. We have other videos that explore the perplexing world of how your financial data is actually sold to countless entities. So make sure that you check out those videos too, so that you're not left chasing your tail when it comes to data collection. I'm a Bitcoin fan and I'm scaring